What is this hour called?
The No Sour Ha Ha Fun Time Power Hour.
What did I say when I thought I got it?
I have no idea.
It's right for today.
It's right for today.
Oh,
it's,
you know, right. What, Jane? Can you ever be on my side? Ever?
What do you think got me this job?
What do you think got me? Oh, darn it. Shoot. I'm in.
Moving Wisconsin forward, one joke at a time. This is Kristen Bry with As Goes Wisconsin.
Yada, yada, yada.
Hello, Wisconsin!
Hello, Wisconsin! Welcome to the No Sour Ha Ha Fun Time Power Hour.
Just tripped right off your tongue.
I don't screw it up anymore. I just got it.
Oh, you got it down.
I got it down after it only took me a whole month to memorize what we're calling our last hour of the day, where we talk about fun things instead of sad things or angry things. We talk about fun stuff that's coming up in Wisconsin, and that includes this week, the Midwest Gaming Classic, which is a gamer's paradise and one of the country's largest independent gaming trade shows, and it's been going on for like 20 some years almost. And so here to talk about it and what you can expect and whether or not this is for hardcore gamers and going to convince Jane to show up this weekend is hype man Andy Nelson. That's your official title,
right? Yes, they give me a badge and everything that says hype man on it. I love it. It's like the reason I go.
So, and you've been involved in it for like 15 years.
Yeah, in one form or another. You know, I started working officially with my, you know, promotional PR marketing business a few years ago. But, you know, back when I was at the Pabst Theater Group, we used to co-promote shows with them all the time. We would bring video games live through. So it was back in like 2007, I think, the first time I went. And it was at some hotel in like Econimowoc with, you know, maybe 1,000 people. And now it's grown into this massive thing where we're expecting like 20,000 people from all over the world. So it's just fun. It's a real independent. There's like no corporate sponsor on this thing.
Oh,
it's
wow.
A very Milwaukee gaming thing. So we're just super excited for this weekend.
And so for someone who's never been, how would you describe what the Midwest Gaming Classic is? Like, how would you describe what you to expect? What's your elevator pitch?
Yeah, so I mean, you're gonna see what this event is about is actually playing games, retro and modern games. So you're gonna see seas of pinball machines. You're gonna see seas of arcade machines. You're gonna see seas of console games like Sega Genesis and Atari and Nintendo. But then there's also like a whole playable gaming museum that's rows and rows and rows of like computer games, like Oregon Trail, for example.
Yes.
Or
never
have you
that
throughout
game.
The years. Like literally every game that you can possibly think of is there. And that's just one section of it. Then there's also like things like Dungeons and Dragons, like tabletop games, role-playing games, Pokemon cards, like there's whole tournaments. And then there's whole rooms of like panelists, like industry gaming professionals. So it's just everything retro and modern gaming. And I think the last thing I'll say, comparatively, like for anyone that's been to a Comic-Con, those are all obviously huge corporate, you know, sponsored events. The vast majority is things that you can just buy. You walk through, you dress up in your cosplay. It's a lot of fun. This, with the price of admission, you go in and you're actually playing games. Everywhere you look, there's stuff to do. And oddly enough, that's a rare thing in the Comic-Con world.
Because it's Comic-Con's, I always thought of it as just like meeting celebrities, meeting like characters. Is there also a gaming element to Comic-Con that I wasn't aware of?
Just like a little bit. That's the thing. You meet celebrities, you check out the panelists, you wear your cosplay, you buy stuff. That's about it. You know, so I think that's what really like sets this apart. Like ever since the beginning, it's just that indie Milwaukee feel to it. That it started from such a small thing with a gaming enthusiast to now where it's grown into this thing that's extremely, I think another really important note to make is, you know, I'm not personally, I'm super into this, but I'm not a hardcore gamer. This is welcome to everyone, Jane, if you're listening. Actually, absolutely everyone. Yes, there's hardcore gamers. It brings that in. It's a very welcoming space for all those people. But also, really, like, the most common sight I see throughout the weekend are, like, parents and grandparents bringing their kids in and being like, hey, this is the pinball game I played. Here's this Pong I played. Here's Oregon Trail and what that used to look like in the 90s. So it's a really, really cool event that you see people of all ages, all backgrounds coming in and just enjoying games.
And that's the retro part of it that I think sounds really fun and cool to me. Because we on Friday, we're talking to Brandon Chalker about esports and kind of the new wave of everything that is happening with esports teams and how it's like competitive and all the stuff like that. But like that was certainly like when you say Oregon Trail, I played that. That was the game to play in the 90s, but also just like the love of all sorts of games. And so when they first started this, what was the original games that they were promoting? Because it couldn't have been everything all at once, right?
So this, exactly. It started from in the smallest, humblest beginnings you can possibly imagine. It was the year 2001. And it was started in the basement of a Boy Scout office with like 100 people. And it was just around one gaming console, a little known gaming console called the Atari Jaguar. So not just Atari, but it was Atari Jaguar. So it was a different segment of that. And people loved playing this game for that was like from the 80s and 90s. And they came and to celebrate that. And then year after year after year, it just ballooned into kind of like, let's just celebrate all gaming and let's invite some more of our friends. And I think, you know, around like I said, around 2007 is when I came in. And that's when it really started to really break up into all these different types of gaming. Right. And then they moved to Oconomowoc. Then they were for a while at the Brookfield Sheridan. And then they started having like they were busting at the seams with it. There was whole like circus tents trying to fill up all the space that they had. And so I think it was around 5-6 years ago, I remember talking to the co-founder and saying like, please bring this to Milwaukee. This has become a massive thing. Milwaukee needs this, you know, Visit Milwaukee needs this. We need a convention like this. So let's grow this here and let us have like be a huge, huge thing here. And that's what's become, you know, we're expecting more than 20,000 people from literally all over the world. They see people coming from not only around the United States, but all over the world. So it's really, Visit Milwaukee tells us they expect like over $2 million to be spent in tourism dollars downtown. Wow. So it's not just a cute little gaming thing anymore.
Yeah.
This is a legit thing. It's really cool, but it still has that indie feel to it. It's not, you know, over corporatized.
We're talking to Andy Nelson, hype man Andy Nelson, about the Midwest Gaming Classic, which starts Friday and goes to Sunday. And so is there any difference between if someone were to buy a pass to go all 3 days, what's the differences between each day, or what would be if you want this thing come Saturday versus Sunday, kind of for people if they haven't bought their tickets yet, reasons to go to one day or the other?
Yeah, great question. Yeah, Friday night is really it's called preview night. That's when you get a lot of the hardcore gamers. You get people that are traveling from all over the world that are staying at the hotels around the convention center downtown and really enjoying that night. There's a lot of really fun, unique games that they're kind of going outside the box, right? Like they have, you know, if anyone that likes NBA Jam, what's happened a lot on Friday nights is the voice of NBA Jam, Tim Kritzrow, is there. And there's a whole like Papa Shot competition. Ooh. Where he's like voicing it. So it's like, he's like, you know, from downtown, you know, boom, shakalaka. He's like literally the voice of NBA Jam, right? So it's a lot of like geeky, cool things happening on Friday night. Saturday is everything. That's when the big crowds come on Saturday. Everything you can possibly imagine is there. A lot of the panels are on Saturday. And then Sunday, both Saturday and Sunday are good for families, but Sunday is a little bit out of a discounted rate. All weekend long, kids 9 and under get in free. So you see a lot of families on Sunday as well. So I think whenever you come, there's a little bit, you know, little something different, you know, in the mix for you.
Got it. And so for you, what is your favorite, is it exhibit, tournament? Like, what is your favorite thing about the weekend?
My favorite, I'm really like a simple guy. There's a whole, you walk into, like we've all been to some sort of convention, right? So there's these huge exhibit halls. So just to like imagine in your mind's eye that entirely filled with like arcades and pinball machines.
It's a lot more fun than a SAS convention.
That's my favorite part. Just like walking in there and playing all of those games on free play. And there's always something unique. Like there's, they have these huge industries that make new pinball machines. So there's always something, you know, new and different to try, like the new latest and greatest pinball machine. But my favorite game is Tron. I do love the movie, Kristen, but the Tron, the arcade game, is like my favorite. And I want to have that in my basement, but I don't have that in my basement. So I love playing that there.
All right. Well, and is there anything that is the other thing that I thought I saw on the website? What is a video game themed band? What does that even sound like?
Yes. So great. It's a lot of, it's like a lot of, like, you can imagine like the Super Mario theme song. So yes. It's a lot of like bands that are become really popular online that will be there. Some are from here, some are from around the country that are coming in and playing a lot of like video game music. So it's pretty like, cool. There's a whole legit stage for it.
So yeah. is it original music, or is it that they're playing the themes and like the scores of these different games, or is it satire Both. Songs? Because that we might be able to get Jane. If it's a parody songs, we could definitely get Jane there for that.
I'm just gonna go ahead and say yes.
Okay.
So perfect. Jane, come. Yeah.
All right. Well, anything in the last minute that you people should know? Where can they get tickets?
Yeah. So you know, tickets are gonna be available. You know, you can walk up and get tickets downtown at the Wisconsin Center. But I recommend going to MidwestGamingClassic.com. Very easy website to remember, and you can pick up tickets there. Whatever you're into. But again, you can walk up and get tickets. And again, it's really, people love Summerfest. People love State Fair. Everyone's got their favorite Wisconsin thing. I know I'm biased, but this is my favorite Wisconsin event. It's just super unique. It's a wonderful event. It's a lot of fun. I've brought like nieces and nephews over the years. It's a really, really cool thing.
All right. Well, I think we might go on Sunday. You might see Mike and I, because he loves games. He likes to pride himself of being very good at games. We'll see if we can drag Jay.
Mike's been there.
I think Mike has definitely been there. I have not been there, so this would be my first time. Well, Andy Nelson, thank you so much for spending time with us. Have so much fun this weekend. Hopefully I'll see you, and we'll talk to you soon.
I will. Yes, thanks for having me.
All right.
See you, Kristen.
See you soon. Stay tuned. This is As Goes Wisconsin. In the middle of the night.
You are listening to As Goes Wisconsin, a product of Civic Media. Enjoy it live across Wisconsin, Monday through Friday from 11 a.m. until 2 p.m. Find your local station on our website, civicmedia.us, or on the Civic Media app, and catch any of your favorite shows as a podcast wherever you listen.
Welcome back to As Goes Wisconsin. I am Kristen Bry. She is Jane Matinere.
I love Andy Nelson.
I know. He's such a delight.
He is.
He's a very positive person.
Yep.
Best hair in Milwaukee.
By far. I was actually going to compliment him. It was great.
If you want to go back and watch the live stream so you can see what we're talking about, you can always find it on Facebook, YouTube, and Twitter under As Goes Wisconsin. Be sure to follow us when you are there. But yes, Andy Nelson has a lot of volume. I don't know if it's natural. I don't know if he uses mousse. We missed the opportunity to ask him what products he uses.
There's nothing is going to stand up that high on its own. I'm just assuming that there's product involved.
Speaking of which, I had a shout out to my friends Sutton Courtney, who had their baby over the weekend, who I've never seen this much hair on a kid.
Really?
Like right out of the gate.
Wow.
There's a head full of hair. And so my mom, who grew up, once she had a daughter, I grew up doodads by Deb, which were bows that Debbie made for little girls, specifically me, that I wore I don't know. I don't know if I wore them willingly or begrudgingly until I chopped all my hair off in second grade. But I sent her the picture and she immediately said, I think she's going to need some bows.
Little girls can never have too many bows.
Little girls can never have too many bows. And so, but yes. And so did we convince you? I think Mike and I are going to go on Sunday.
All right. I have to admit, I am Last of Us curious.
Last of Us? You mean the show?
Yeah. Well, that was based on a video game.
Yeah, it was a very popular video game.
Right. So I am curious about fighting fungi people.
Fungi. All right.
Fungal people, whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
And I would also, I'm really curious about VR.
I would love to see you in a VR headset playing a game. Because I have not played around with it very much. I tried on an Oculus headset once. And it's wild. Like, one of the games that we play, they had us do was like rock climbing. And it's wild to have both feet on the ground and yet trick your mind into all you're doing is like you're rock climbing, but it tricks your brain into thinking that you're stepping on something besides the ground. And I've heard people say like the different VR like workout programs. And you're either fighting something, like you're fighting zombies or something like that. And like you get like a really like drenched workout.
Oh, I bet. And
so, yeah, I'd be interested to see. I would love to see you play with like fight. Jane fights zombies.
Which is what I always do all weekend anyway.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So that sounds super fun. And it does sound super unique to Wisconsin. I can't believe they don't have any corporate sponsors after all these years.
Maybe they don't want them.
No. I mean, it seems like they don't need them.
Yeah.
But that was a really interesting point to say that, you know, in so many other events, we always see.
Brought to you by.
Gruber Law Office.
Right.
And so to see that, to grow that organically, that you don't need big corporate sponsors is very, very cool.
Yeah.
So, but speaking of, this was, I guess, games or sports. But as we head into the last week of March Madness for both men and women. I actually heard this on Todd's show this morning. March Madness and the Final Four, you can only use for the NC2A. So the fact that the Badgers, who are in the NIT tournament, are in the semifinal game tonight, tomorrow, to then potentially play in the championship on Thursday, you can't call that the Final Four. Did you know that?
No.
Branding. Trademark, baby.
So what, the Final Four police are going to come?
I don't know.
And find
them? I think they just, probably more on the legal side of things, the NIT can't call it the Final Four, even if the like colloquialisms amongst us common people refer to it as that. But I learned that in Todd's show today, that it's it is March Madness and Final Four is specific to the NC2A tournament. But no one I think still has anyone left in the Final Four for the men's tournament because it's been such a crazy tournament of upsets. But the women's tournament also going into its final two games. But I thought this was worth sharing as we come to an end on Women's History Month, celebrating women, that Wisconsin Badgers, that, you know, we love our Badger, both men and women's sports. But setting the bar pretty high for women's sports, because Wisconsin is the only college in the nation to hit 8,200 plus fans at three women's sports events in a single season.
Really?
So the standout games at the Kohl Center include, there was 14,430 fans for a February women's hockey game against St. Cloud State. The second highest NC2A women's hockey single game attendance in history.
Impressive.
And also, I guess we didn't really talk about the fact that the women's hockey team won the national title again.
Again.
And doesn't, I mean, as much as we can lament any other sport right now, like we are dominant in women's hockey. But then there was 16,833 fans for a September women's volleyball match against Florida. And then there was 8,217 fans for a neck-and-neck women's basketball game against Northwestern in January. So who says people don't want to watch women play sports?
That's awesome.
Isn't that awesome?
Yeah, it really is. It really is.
But yeah, and I just coming back to the fact that the Badgers women hockey team, what is was that their seventh title?
That sounds right. Yeah.
Just,
yeah. What an accomplishment.
Yeah. Seriously. And still coached by Mark Johnson, arguably probably one of the best coaches in Wisconsin history as far as win rate, and obviously also being part of the miracle team for the Olympics.
Right. Oh, right.
The Olympics. So that's some fun trivia for you this week. But when we come back, I had a reflection as far as after going to the ballet last week and I saw The Hunchback of Notre Dame and was reminded of the adult themes of that story. And who thought it was going to make a good kids movie? This is Ask Ghost Wisconsin.
Put them together, and what have you got? Bibbidi bobbidi boo. Salagadoola, mentrikaboola, bibbidi bobbidi.
Welcome back to As Goes Wisconsin. I am Kristen Bry. She is Jane Matinere. And can you tell me a Disney kids movie that does not have a super dark origin material?
Yeah, the Grimm Brothers, boy. They were grim.
They were grim. Mm. They were real grim. And so 844-967-2789. What story does not have its original piece being pretty dark? Because I bring this up. So I loved Hunchback of Notre Dame, the Disney version, came out when I was 10.
Okay.
I think it was 96. And I loved it. I still love it. It's great music. And literally, this is how much it stuck with me. Fast forward to 2015, and I was in Paris by myself, and I, who usually does not do lines, stood in line to see the Hunchback.
Notre Dame.
To see Notre Dame. And literally, as I was standing in this, like, centuries-old building, God Help the Outcast was playing in my head. Like, that soundtrack was still in my head.
Wow.
So that is the hold that movie had on me as a kid. And so, and I knew, you know, it's by Victor Hugo, who Les Miserables, mm-hmm. you know, and like was, and you know, and I learned one of the huge big reasons, motivating reasons he wrote the book was because at one point they were going to tear down Notre Dame.
Really?
Instead of restore it and keep it up. They were going to just tear it down.
Wow.
And he was such a avid fan of the Gothic architecture that he basically wrote this as a, I don't know if a plea, but basically to advocate for
saving it.
But if you really, like, that story is dark.
The Hunchback of Notre Dame.
Yes. The Victor Hugo version is incredibly dark in the same way that Les Miserables is incredibly dark. And I was reminded of this because I got to go see the ballet, the Milwaukee Ballet right now, or I think maybe it ended over the weekend, but they did Michael Pink's Hunchback of Notre Dame.
Okay.
And I went with a girlfriend. It was excellent.
I bet.
But it's a very different version than what happens in the Disney version. But even... And so I went after I saw the ballet, I went and re-listened to the Disney soundtrack. And even that, I was kind of like, there's some themes in here that are questionable, especially as we're having these conversations around what is appropriate for children. That was like, how was no one a little concerned about this? Back then. Because if you don't know the story of The Hunchback of Notre Dame... So, in the movie, the bad guy in The Hunchback of Notre Dame is the Archdeacon Frollo, who is he's like very pious. He is Quasimodo's father in the fact that he basically Quasimodo as a baby was left at the doorsteps of Notre Dame. And he saw it as a sign from God that how pious he really was to adopt him.
And bring him up.
And bring him up. But basically he was then forced to stay inside because he was so ugly. He would scare people, and he was the bell ringer. And so he was also in the book mute and deaf because the bells basically broke his eardrums. And so in the Disney version, Frollo is the only one who dies in the end. Esmeralda survives, Quasi survives, Phoebus, who is like the captain that she, the love interest, survives. That's not what happens in the real story.
Oh, really?
No. So in the original, and what drives a large part of the plot is the fact that the Archdeacon is overcome by lust and desire for Esmeralda. And so it's basically, if he can't have her, she cannot no longer keep living. So like and this is a huge part of the original story, is like, she's too sexy. And so he either needs to like force her to be with him, or he tries to basically like get her arrested and executed.
Lovely. So it's the whole, if I can't have her, no one
can. And then the reason why Quasimodo's in there is because at one point the Archdeacon convinces Quasimodo to go kidnap her, and then Quasimodo gets caught kidnapping her, and so then he gets publicly flogged, and she's nice to him while he's getting publicly flogged, so then he becomes obsessed with her because it's the only kindness like anyone's ever given him. So it's all these things that like, and at some point in the real story, Phoebus dies. She gets accused of murdering him. She dies. Quasimodo is basically, the end of the story is him like holding her lifeless body.
Oh, lovely.
And so it's like, this could definitely be a Game of Thrones story. And it got me thinking about the fact that that's how most of the Disney movies are.
Well, they're very sanitized versions of the original stories.
And so this starts with Cinderella,
which is the original Cinderella is horrifying.
Yeah,
it's horrifying.
And so like at least she does, like she does end up with the prince, but in the meantime her stepsisters get their eyes pecked out by birds, and in order to try to fit into the slipper, one chops her toes off and the other chops her heel off.
Yeah, that wasn't in any of the Cinderella versions that I've seen.
No. And then Rapunzel, they made that into a Disney movie. I think they called it Tangled instead of just Rapunzel.
Right.
But that was made kind of post my time of consuming Disney movies. But, you know, the original story is basically centered around sex and pregnancy. And so Rapunzel is given to the witch because her father stole herbs from the witch's garden to satisfy her pregnant mother's
cravings.
And so then, so that's like the origin story. But then as she grows up and she's held in this tower, and when the prince turns up unannounced at her tower, and the two begin the night evidently with unprotected lovemaking.
Uh-oh.
This is in the original story.
Wow.
Because she soon becomes pregnant. Rapunzel in the original story becomes pregnant. And, of course, she has no idea what pregnancy is. But then the witch banishes her to the desert to give birth on her own there.
I'm sorry. I thought this was happening in Florida. Continue.
and then also the prince, he also goes blind at the end of that story because the witch, like, throws him into the rose bush and the thorns blind him.
What were the Grimm brothers on, man?
I don't know.
Or what was the point, just to terrify your children?
But I think it's interesting, like, how, and so I ask again if anyone knows, because I actually don't know, because I also recently found out that Bambi was originally written as like a warning about the Nazis. It's originally a Jewish writer who, it was about like a hunter, and like it's like a whole allegory for Jewish people being hunted in like early Nazi Germany.
Wow.
So that's also super dark. So it's like, I ask again, what Disney movie doesn't have a super dark origin story, or like its origin material isn't like, oh, that is
that's pretty
is that for kids? 844-967-2789, because I can't think of one.
Well, even Frozen, which is one of the more recent ones that I can think of, but that has a dark core too.
Is it based off something?
No, but I mean, I still think for an animated children's movie, there's a dark heart there too.
And maybe that's part of, I guess that goes back to like what is child appropriate? Because ultimately these are stories, and I'm not saying it's necessarily a bad thing. I just think it's interesting that so many of the like foundational elements of children's movies are based off things that someone saw the original source material and was like, yeah, that'd make a good kids movie.
If we just leave out, you know, like 3/4 of the original plot, it'll be fine.
Well, and it's not 3/4. It's like details, right?
Right.
I mean, but although Little Mermaid was total, the end is totally changed. Little Mermaid, in the original Little Mermaid, she does not survive.
She doesn't?
No. Like, and it's like, so the original, let me get the, so I don't screw this up. But because Malcolm Gladwell did a whole series on this. I think it was like a 3-episode arc about how the actual story of Little Mermaid is very different than what the beloved and soon to be live action film of Little Mermaid is. But it was, you know, it's the story of a mermaid making a disastrous deal with a sea witch in return for legs. But in the original story, it's not that she just takes her voice box like magically. The witch cuts out her tongue.
Oh my God.
To make matters worse, when she gets her legs, she's in like terrible pain trying to walk. And then the prince ends up marrying someone else. Sebastian and Flounder do not save the day like they do in Little Mermaid. Triton does not like make a rainbow at the end. But in general, he marries someone else and she goes back to sea and she turns into like seafoam.
Oh.
Yeah. So like that one, they did change the plot. Cinderella ends the same. It's just they don't give the details of what happens to the evil sisters.
Wow.
But I'm trying to think. I mean, like, can you think of one?
Again, if the origin is the Brothers Grimm, pretty much no. Because they were some dark guys.
And I don't know if the point is, because I mean, fables, like some of the oldest storytelling mechanisms we have are, you know, they're about teaching lessons and teaching, you know, using characters and sometimes not realistic situations to teach bigger themes about life. And so, I mean, even thinking about Roald Dahl and like the, now that they're trying to sanitize some of those books, whereas like the themes of Roald Dahl's books are not
happy spice.
Yeah. Like the core story of like witches is pretty dark. The core story of Matilda and being ignored by her family and like only having one teacher who's actually nice to her. Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, or Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory, is not, you know, a super, like, he's not, Willy Wonka's not like a friendly, normal guy.
No, he's not.
And so like a lot of those themes of those books are like dark in the first place, and yet they're children's books. I mean, they're not like 5-year-olds, but like 4th grade, 5th grade. And so maybe that is just like the core part of children's literature and children's books is finding more sanitized ways to tell adult stories.
Well, I'm just trying to figure out what lesson were the Brothers Grimm trying to get across with them cutting off their toes and their heels
to be nice, is
that it? I thought it was, you know, make sure you buy the right shoe size. I'm not sure what they were going for on that.
Yeah, I don't know.
It's just creepy.
Because even, you know, think about, what are some of the other ones? Like Hansel and Gretel, of just a witch that eats children.
And they kill her.
And then Red Riding Hood, where he eats her grandmother. And then she And he and she gets eaten, right? Is it the the huntsman that?
The huntsman saves her, I think.
And they're just like still alive, and because a wolf is like a snake where they just swallow you whole instead of. So you'd be fine as long as we just cut your stomach.
Sure,
open.
No problem.
But yeah, I guess again, I guess maybe Moana. I don't know the origin story of Moana.
That doesn't seem. I love that movie.
I love that, but I love the music of that movie.
I do too. Can't we just have one nice movie?
I'm
without
trying,
having to know all.
But
the
again,
scary
is any,
stuff
has anyone
it?
Texted in? I don't know if anyone has an answer for me. Of any what Disney movie does not have super dark origin material?
Even Bambi starts out with, you know, a death.
Yeah, and maybe Lion is because what is the original the origin story or the origin material for Lion King?
I thought that was an original.
That might have it wasn't. I don't think Aladdin was. Oh. All right, well, we got to wrap up, but stay tuned. This is As Goes Wisconsin. Welcome back to As Goes Wisconsin. I am Kristen Bry. She is Jane Matinair, and we are rounding out this Monday after a pretty good show. I'm surprised we didn't get more feedback on the Disney thing.
Again, I don't think there are many that don't have a real dark backstory.
So I should have asked a different question as far as what is another? What is your favorite dark Disney movie? And what is your favorite Disney movie? Do you have one? Do you have like one that...
I love Moana.
Okay.
I really do. And it was The Rock, right?
The Rock was in it, yep. And it was also, the music was by Lin-Manuel Miranda.
Oh, yeah. Yep. No, the soundtrack is wonderful.
And so growing up, I feel like, I don't know. I feel like there was like the almost 3 years in a row was like Beauty and the Beast, Aladdin, and then Lion King. Was that the order? And I feel like those three in a row for a long time were like my favorites.
The top
and then
ones.
And then Hunchback came out and I really liked that one.
I have never seen that one.
It's good, but I mean, like I said, like the original story is dark. And even when I think about the soundtrack that is still part of the Disney story. And like I said, like a core part of that show and that original story is the lust of the Archdeacon and his inner turmoil about wanting this in the movie, they still use the word gypsy, but Romani woman. And basically, and like, you'd think that that part, especially in the climate that we're in now, they wouldn't have included that part. But this is one of the songs called Heaven's Light / Hellfire, which is a, not duet, but it's like, it goes from one to the other. So it goes from Quasimodo singing to the arch, to Frollo singing. And these are some of the lyrics that Frollo sings in a kids movie. Beata Maria, you know I am a righteous man. Of my virtue, I am justly proud. Beata, this is like chanting like a religious song.
Okay.
Beata Maria, you know I'm so much purer than the common, vulgar, weak, licentious? I should know that because I used to know all these lyrics. Crowd. Also, big word for a kid.
Mm-hmm.
Then tell me, Maria, why I see her stand dancing there, why her smoldering eyes still scorch my soul. I feel her, I see her, the sun caught in her raven hair is blazing in me out of all control. Like fire, hellfire, this fire in my skin, this burning desire is turning me to sin.
Ooh.
This is a kid's movie.
Wowza.
So they kept that part. I mean, I don't know how you do the show with like, and can create the stakes and the conflict without that part.
Right.
But I would love to like flash back to being a 10-year-old and if there was any concern when this came out.
But did you even recognize that as a kid? That probably didn't even cross the transom of your brain.
Well, I understood it as far as a plot point for, I understood him to be the bad guy.
Right.
Because he wanted to hurt. Also because, you know, like Jafar and every other character.
The way they're drawn.
The way they're drawn is like, oh, that's clearly the villain.
Yeah, pretty
and
easy.
And so my 10-year-old brain was like, oh, we don't like that guy.
Yeah.
And, but it's just, it's the constant question of like, what is appropriate, what is not, who gets to decide, why is, you know, because this, I mean, and if anything, this points to an ongoing issue with the church, which is of the pious leaders, whether it's taking advantage of that power with young men or women, both. And so, like, if anything, it was like, oh, this is actually a true thing that's been going on for a long time.
Temptation, baby.
So, all right. Well, what do we have coming up tomorrow? I'm trying to think of anything we can plug for tomorrow's show. But I know coming up on Luke Mather's show, they're going to be talking about AI. We haven't talked a lot about AI in this show.
I find it all very confusing.
Well, I also just don't know, like, beyond the question of, like, is this scary?
Well, yeah, I think it's scary.
Yeah. And I think the more I hear about it, I think on one hand it's useful. There's probably increasingly more ways for it to be useful. But also, if it's something that continues to teach itself and it doesn't need humans to be teaching it things, but also what it does to the workforce and how much dumber it makes us and by depending on it. But so on Dueling Tangents, they're going to talk about that. And then I think he's going to run through a bunch of Wisconsin headlines. And on the Chad Holmes show, 2:15, they're going to keep talking to different candidates for the Wausau School Board. And at 3, he's going to be joined by Joel Lewis of Citizen Action Wisconsin. So definitely stay tuned for that. And
if you want to go back to Luann Bird was a wonderful, wonderful guest. She was just terrific. And I would also suggest, again, tomorrow we are 1 week away. Tomorrow will be 1 week away from the really important April 4th election for the Wisconsin Supreme Court. So we covered quite a bit of stuff in that first hour.
Yeah.
With some of the nasty stuff that's going on.
Absolutely.
As we get closer and closer.
As we get closer and closer, we got one more week, and then we'll get a little bit of a reprieve from political ads.
When will be the next election? Do you know?
We'll have another spring election in 2024.
Okay.
For local seats, but I don't think there's anything coming up in the fall for this year. So then, but obviously, by the end of this year, we'll already be in.
We'll be drowning in
presidential stuff.
Yep.
And RNC stuff. And so, yeah, but then coming up tomorrow on our show, we have Dan Schaefer from the Beacon Population Area. So we'll get his thoughts probably on anything. I'll ask him the same question of, like, what could sway anyone at this point as far as
who you're going to vote for?
Well, yeah, if you're going to vote, who you're going to vote for with 1 week left. And then we're going to talk to a linguistics professor from UW-Madison, Joe Salmons.
This will be great.
We read about Milwaukee Ease, which I had never heard of before until reading about it in Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. But we're going to have a conversation around our interpretations of language, of like what dialects, what our assumption about different dialects are. Like, why do British people, we assume that they're smart? I guess it maybe depends on the British accent.
It depends on that. Yes, it does.
But versus like a Boston accent or a Wisconsin accent.
Or a New Jersey accent.
Yeah, and like we love Charlie Barron's, but if you actually met someone who talked that way in real life, what would your impression of them be? And so I'm really excited for that conversation. So come back tomorrow, 11 a.m., As Goes Wisconsin. Stick around for Dueling Tangents and the Chad Holmes Show now. But otherwise, thank you for listening. Thank you for texting. And we'll see you tomorrow.
Thank you for listening to As Goes Wisconsin, available on Spotify, Apple, Google, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. Please subscribe and leave us a rating. As Goes Wisconsin is a product of Civic Media and airs live across Wisconsin Monday through Friday from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. Civic Media is a statewide network of radio stations broadcasting local news, local sports, thoughtful commentary, and hand-picked music. We are always streaming on the Civic Media app. Find out where you can listen on the air or learn more about Civic Media and sponsorship opportunities by going to our website, civicmedia.us. We thank you for listening.